7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tom Ianelli here with you with another Croc podcast, along with my friend Angel Santana. Have faith, let it begin. Angel, how the heck are you?
Life is interesting, but you know what? Every time we hit the record button, every time we say it's the Croc podcast, I know we're about to change somebody's life. So you know what? I feel great.
Awesome, Angel. I feel the same way. And what better group of people than our cancer survivors / thrivers to serve and hopefully give them information. And we're going to actually, we took a pause last week to celebrate our 100th podcast, which for two knuckleheads out in the country trying to help our survivors out there in the universe, in the world, not a bad accomplishment.
No, not at all. It's a great achievement. Congratulations to you and your vision. And I'm happy.
Thank you, my friend. And we're going to get back now to work and help our survivors / thrivers try to identify who it is that they actually are, come to grips with that realization, and then kind of change gears and become the people they want to become. We are going to help our survivors / thrivers use their cancer diagnosis, use that tragedy, use that trauma, use that pain to actually be able to then turn the retrospectoscope inside for them to kind of gain knowledge and insight to them as people, and then kind of shake things up to become the people they want to be. So we're going to leverage that cancer tragedy and turn it into triumph. And we kind of started in a way of trying to identify who we are. And we used what I'd like to use an analogy to start the podcast is utilizing the scientific method. So when scientists, since the inception of time, would make discoveries, they would make discoveries one of two ways. They would either directly make the discovery by their own observations. And I use as an example, using a microscope. So when they would develop the lenses and the microscopes, they were able to look under the microscope and see some of the microbes or the cells that they had postulated were there, but actually, you know, were able to confirm it by their eyes. You know, another example I give of direct observation is when Dr. Fleming first noticed in his petri dish that this substance called penicillin, there were no bacteria growing along the petri dishes in the area of where the penicillin was. Thus, his direct observation that these bugs were very responsive to this particular item, this particular molecule. So that's direct observation. So far, we've used direct observation in helping our survivors identify who they are. Firstly, by going to, you know, coming to the realization that who they are is probably not who they think they are, and to be comfortable with that idea. From there, we help them confront their past to find out what were some of the things that were operative in their worlds, in their childhoods, in their, you know, teenage years and so on, that sort of shaped who they currently are. And then to be comfortable acknowledging that we all have a dark side, that we all have parts of us that are unattractive. We all have parts of us that are ugly, and to be okay with that. And then we taught our survivors how to take their own psychological vital signs. So we looked at about 7 or 8 different indices of where they could kind of see where they are on these scales. And again, everybody has a little bit of everything, but we were trying to make sure that they realized that there was a value or a range that was okay. And then there was an out of range, which is not okay, either out of range too much this way, too much that way, and help them to be able to use these direct methods of observation to find out who they kind of are. And today we're going to kind of turn the tables a little bit and use what's called an indirect method. So for those of you who are history / science nerds like me, you remember that the genetic materials in our cells, the direction of what makes us us, is through a molecule called DNA. And it took a long time to really figure out, like we thought we knew that there was this genetic material somewhere in our cells. We just didn't kind of know where it was and we didn't know what it was. And there were two British scientists, Watson and Crick, who got the credit, although the credit was not necessarily theirs, but they certainly took the credit for indirectly describing what the DNA molecule actually looked like. And it is a double helix, and it is a connection of nucleotides, and there's connecting bases, A and T and C and G for all those high school biology people. But the way they did it was not by seeing it. They couldn't see it. So they stole, they stole the famous photograph number 51 from Rosalind Franklin, who was given zero credit for anything. And it was really her crystalline photomicrograph of this structure, this DNA, which actually turned out to look like an X. So you can find that famous picture on the internet.
Yeah.
And, by looking at that X, they were able to establish that the DNA molecule was indeed a double helix. So what we're going to do today is we're going to do a Watson and Crick, and we're going to indirectly look at ourselves, not through what we see or the insights we've gained or having some of those aha moments that we need to do to find out who we are, but also try to find out who we are through the reflection or the lens of others. So that's what today is going to be about.
Interesting. Very interesting intro.
Yeah, no. So it's very, very important for us to utilize every possible avenue that we can, to use every resource that we can to assist us, because finding out who we are, being okay with who we are, and then making the tweaks we need to be to change who we are. We're not asking this. This is not an easy task. That's why it's taking about 7 million podcasts to get to the end. But we will get to the end, and we're actually getting there. This is a really good turn for our cancer survivors to use this. And for anybody listening, whether it's a survivor or a survivor by proxy, you know, a caregiver, a family member or whatever, I think it could, you know, really help everyone. And we're going to basically start with my usual dumb, trite, meaningless example of something that happened to me in my life and sort of set the stage, and it happened to me in high school. So it shows how powerful this example is of an indirect method, a method of being able to judge, you know, who actually I was at that time. And how this person, his name was Rich, how this guy named Rich, I think we were seniors in high school, how his outburst and almost fist fight with me, changed a little bit of who I was and gave me this insight on reflections. So this was a guy that I was friends with through high school. We shared a love of music. And for some reason in those days, it's not like it is today where you just go on an app and get a ticket to a concert. Tickets, you had to actually go to a ticket broker, or sometimes you had to go to a scalper. You know, there was no Ticketmaster, you know, and who the heck, you know, out of Paterson, New Jersey can get to New York City to go to Madison Square Garden to buy a ticket. You had to figure out a way to get a ticket to some of the shows that you might have wanted to see in those days. Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, Yes, you know, Queen. These were the bands that we were going to see. And those tickets were really hard to get. So I had a connection to get these tickets. The only problem is there was a little bit of a Ponzi scheme going on. And I took their money and I gave it to my broker to get us three tickets to this concert. I think it was a Led Zeppelin concert, actually. And the ticket broker, you know, took all of our money and ended up absconding, you know, from Paterson to Passaic or wherever to Bayonne. And he absconded with our money. Now, of course, you know, Tom at that time, you know, took zero responsibility and couldn't understand, you know, why, whatever happened, you know, Rich was my friend, he's not been that nice to me lately. He's kind of actually given me the cold shoulder. And then one day, you know, we had this big blow up in class when I tried to borrow his book, and it almost ended up in a fist fight because all of his emotions and anger about he identified that I was responsible. I was responsible for stealing his money. And, you know, when you're 18-year-old kid, 17-year-old kid, and you're coming from, you know, a really low income, area, you know, whatever it was, $10, $20, whatever it happens to be, that's a lot of money. And I didn't recognize the fact that he had that experience that I was the one who stole his money, even though I didn't really steal his money. My ticket broker stole his money, but it sort of didn't even faze me or make any sense to me. So then I said, wow, Rich was giving me all these signals. He was telling me he's mad at me, and I didn't even know it. Like he was, you know, sort of, you know, just wouldn't, you know, just avoiding me and not talking to me. Like, and I didn't get it. I didn't get it. And I know it's a trite, stupid example, but I think it puts us in the ballpark.
It does. And I, you know, it's funny because you have me, I had to like pause for a second because I know what that feels like. You know, I was a part of something like that, where they were going to get us Knick tickets and it ended up being the same thing, but you know, and you get a little bit upset, but I think that, you know, I think a lot of us can relate to the fact that, you know, we always, need to think before we react, but more importantly, you have to remember that there's repercussions for every action. You know,
well,
what I mean?
not only repercussions, I think what we want to do today is we want to take the emotions and the feelings of others as it relates to us and be able to see them without actually having someone tell us, you know, hey, you're a jerk or you're a dick or you're this or
right.
you're that. We want to be able to get to the point, and we want our survivors and thrivers to, we want to teach them how they can do this without even, you know, without even having to go through that whole trauma of almost getting into a fist fight, you know, in your homeroom classroom. We're going to try to prevent this and also use it to our advantage, because let's face it, every opportunity, every interaction we have with another human being represents an opportunity for growth. So let's break down, Angel, how we can use others indirectly to tell us where we are in our journey of self-discovery. So I have 7 layers of interaction.
Okay.
The first layer is going to be with our immediate family. So that would be our parents, our partners, our spouses, our children, our brothers, our sisters. These are the people who know us the best. They live with us. They grew up with us. They raised us, or we raised them. So they kind of know us pretty well. Second level would be an extended family, like our cousins and our aunts and our uncles that we spend every birthday party with and every Christmas, every Thanksgiving. They don't know us as well, but they certainly know us very well. Then we have what we call our close friends. Angel, you have made it into my category of close friend. You're like a brother to me. So I think it's really important that, you know, we distinguish those few important people in our lives who are worthy of being called our close friends, our besties, our brothers, our sisters, or whatever. Then we have our loose friends, our friends that are friends. Certainly we would describe them as friends, but maybe not people we see very often, not people that are as in, you know, in our life as maybe, you know, we want them to be or don't have the time to or whatever, but they could give us valuable information as well. Mm-hmm. Then we have a category called our acquaintances. So these are people that are very nice or not nice or whatever, but people that we know. We don't really know them well enough to call them friends, but we could definitely derive information from them. And then we have our any coworker or colleague that's not in the category that we would say is as close as an acquaintance or a loose friend. Or there are people at work that I consider close friends, you right. You being one of them, right? So there are other coworkers that we just kind of basically spend 10 hours a day, 8 hours a day, 12 hours a day. But, you know, we're just coworkers. There's really nothing more to it than that. And then, of course, there are strangers as category 7. And what we're going to do with this information is we're going to basically we are going to be able to help our survivors and thrivers use these categories to their benefit. So for example, how do we use this information? How do we get this information? So at first, we're not going to be good at this at all. As a matter of fact, we're going to be unable to be able to read other people and really see what we are to them or how they feel about us. As it reflects of how we behave together or whatever. So we're not going to be able to do it. So we're going to have to do something very, very hard. And guess what that's going to be, Angel?
Oh, I can only imagine.
We're going to actually have to muster up the courage and ask them.
Ask. I was just going to say it.
Just ask them, you know, I've noticed I've experienced a little distance or I've experienced, you know, can we talk about this? Can you tell me your honest feelings on, you know, what's on your mind or what's bothering you, or, you know, can you maybe, even if I don't agree with you, let's talk it out. I'm, you know, because I think we all have that inner self, right? We all have that primitive brain, that like our reptilian brain, that could kind of sense our spidey sense when something's not exactly right or something's not whatever. Mm-hmm. 90% of the time, you know, someone else is just living their life and has their own problems and issues. Because, you know, who are we to think that we're the center of the universe, which is one of the problems in this world, is it's such a narcissistic world. That's why I think a lot of people would like to be a better version of themselves. But in any regard, that's kind of the first step, is to be able to confront somebody and say, hey, listen, I've been experiencing this, or we haven't been as close as we used to, or I've noticed that you did this, you know, which was hurtful to me. And why was that? And, you know, you're going to start by asking. And I have even worse news for you, Angel. You want to know what it is? We're not going to like what they have to say.
Yes.
I'm going to tell everybody right now, they are not going to like what they hear. So I'm preparing you guys in advance that, number one, you have to be brave enough to ask. And number two is, you better be ready for something that's not going to be pretty. So I'm going to tell you, it may not be a fight with Richie Katarba, but it's not going to be pretty. So an analogy, you know, to this methodology that we're talking about, this indirect method of gauging who we are and where we are, is a movie. I love the movies. Angel, we have to go to the movies one day. We're going to get peanut M&Ms and we're going to get popcorn and we're going to sit back and we're going to just enjoy a great movie. But movies that specifically are of the genre of telling a story from different vantage points. There was a movie 20 years ago called Vantage Point, where they were looking at an assassination scheme from different perspectives. The famous, you know, I guess the Criterion Collection movie is called Rashomon, which is a Japanese movie from a famous Japanese director, where the same event is told through the eyes of different villagers and, you know, different people from different parts of the conflict. And that's sort of kind of what we're doing. That's what we're kind of teaching you how to do. We're going to do a Rashomon on you. So the way we're going to work it is, we're going to break everything down. And here's what I want our survivor thrivers to do. I want you to make a checklist, or make it like a little bit of a spreadsheet. And I want you to put on the left the seven categories of people that we interact with: immediate family, extended family, close friends, loose friends, colleagues, coworkers, and strangers. And I'm going to give you just a slight, you know, personal experience of what has helped me grow, you know, with these insights. So when I think of immediate family, of course, I can thank my wife a million times for all she's taught me, but I'm particularly and profoundly thankful to my children, who have specifically, you know, taught me so much about life, and really helped me readjust my attitude of what I was thinking, how I was thinking, or how I thought I was projecting myself. And it really wasn't what was being received. So to them, and for all of those moments of tears and really, you know, those really tough conversations that we've had, you know, I want to use that as an example for myself to help our survivors, you know, maybe shed light on that particular category. For extended family, I've talked about my cousin John a million times. My cousin, I love him to death. We've had a tumultuous relationship always. We have like a sibling rivalry going on. Yeah. And he has never made himself, you know, silent when it comes to wanting to tell me all the things that I've done wrong. And he's been very helpful to help me in my journey of self-discovery, because through all of his, you know, comments, which were not pleasant, but they were very helpful. So I thank him for that. Close friends. I had a friend, I won't mention his name in case he ever listens to the podcast, but he's a very close friend of mine. And what happened was, you know, I really thought I was important to him, you know, because he was important to me. So I'm thinking, well, if you're important to me, I must be important to you. Right. And it took me a while to realize this, but, you know, I would notice that, you know, I would be completely ignored. Like, you know, we would be together and we'd be in a group of, like, if we were alone, it was terrific. But if we were with other people, I might as well have been in, you know, Mogadishu, or I could have been in, you know, Timbuktu. It didn't really matter because I wasn't there. As far as he was concerned, I wasn't there. And I was able to finally recognize that, you know, maybe he's not that close of a friend. Maybe like he doesn't feel about me the way I feel about him. And I did confront him about it. And, you know, we did kind of talk about it and he felt bad and the whole thing. But the reality is the reality, you know, like Bill Parcells always says about football teams, you know, you can say, you know, that, you know, you're a better team than being 2-8, but at the end of the day, you're 2-8. So you just have to kind of accept that fact. Getting to acquaintances, I use not personally, but just my observations of people that are dating. I notice that a lot of times people think they're maybe a lot more, you know, a lot more engaging or pretty or handsome or this or that. And maybe the person that they're trying to woo doesn't feel the same way about them. So there's a reflection there to kind of find out. And Angel, with all your litany of all your bad date stories,
I think
you might be able to like kind of relate to that one.
I knew that was coming.
Yep. Co-workers and colleagues at work. I think of people who I really, you know, especially leading a department, I find that I might think one thing that people are thinking the same way I'm thinking or thinking, you know, having the same philosophy or thought process. And then I might catch them, you know how you are, you like, you know, you round the bend and people are talking shit. And then all of a sudden they see you and they go, oh, you know, and I said, it's okay. Don't worry about it. It's not a problem. You know, I agree with you guys, by the way. And then, you know, kind of using that as a funny moment,
right?
But you can get a lot of information just kind of being a fly on the wall and observing the way people are presenting themselves about you. And I think that's important. And trainers are really awesome too, because trainers really don't have a filter. If you do anything, you know, that's athletic or for your health, it doesn't have to be a physical trainer. It could be a life coach. It could be a psychologist. It could be anybody. You know, and we have a view of ourselves and we probably think we're probably better, faster, stronger than we actually are. And then that coach puts it quickly in perspective that we're not anything that we think we are. We're certainly much less. So it, at the end of the day, everybody, to our wonderful survivors slash thrivers, what I'm trying to say is we're going to utilize every experience, every interaction, every type of person, wherever they fit in our ladder of relationships, whether they be our immediate family or whether they be a stranger to us, we can find value in those interactions to help us find out where we are, find out how we interact with others, and use that information to get us to where we want to be. And at the end of the day, and I'm sure Angel would agree with this because I've heard him say this on his podcast, it's okay to be average. It's okay to be imperfect. It's okay to be flawed. It's okay to be unattractive. Actually, there's a holiness. There's a purity in accepting this fact that we're not perfect and we're not as good or as smart or as pretty or as athletic or as funny as we think we are. And at the end of the day, you know what? That's liberation. That is freedom. Once we get this realization, we can feel that we have less pressure on us. We feel less pretentious. We feel less fake. We feel less stressed. And at the end of the day, it opens the door to further self-enlightenment and eventual growth, again, getting us to where we want to be. Angel Santana, you always get the last word.
I think the best way I can probably put a exclamation point on this is also knowing your environment. So I always use this analogy. I always say, do not be a thermometer, be a thermostat. Control your environment. And I think that's really what it's all about. And knowing who's in your life, how you assess them and how you implement them and what you need out of them, get out of them, so that it makes you and everyone around you a better person and a better comfortable situation.
Angel, thank you for another amazing podcast to our amazing survivors. Have faith, let it begin. Anybody who wants to feel uplifted and spiritually intact, please listen to Angel's daily podcast. Rod Freeman, Small Biz Up. Thanks, Rod. I can't wait to have dinner with you on Monday. I'm going to stalk that menu tonight, going to the Copper Barn on Main Street. All of our listeners, meet us there at 8 p.m. because we'll
6
be
p.m.
gone. No, no, they're going to come at 8 because
oh,
we're gone and we're, not, and we're not paying their tab. So if, to them, they're coming at 8 o'clock. We're going to be there at 6 o'clock. Michael John Gonzaga, I love you, my friend. Charlotte Larson, thank you for your belief and love of us and your support of us. And thank you for everything. And to the board of directors, as I said last week at our 100th episode, you know, it really is a reflection. Angel and I are just the tip of the iceberg. We are here. We are the mouthpieces of this podcast to try to help our survivors. But it's your direction. It is your advice. It is your criticism. It is your love of our survivor that keeps us going. And why do we do this, Angel? We do this for the survivor. Amen. This is my pep talk time. Guys, if you're out there suffering, if you've just been told you have cancer, if you've been told you have cancer 20 years ago, if you've been through treatment or going through treatment or painfully and you're in pain and you're afraid and you're in terror and you don't know what your life is going to look like, you don't know how many years of life you have left because of this terrible, awful disease that we're all trying to eradicate, and you feel alone and you don't know what to do, and you want to take this opportunity to take this diagnosis and spin it on its head and basically take a sword and cut its head off and be a better person because of it. That's what these this module is. It's for you. It's for you guys to know that we believe in you, that you are strong, you are amazing, you are tough, you are worthwhile, you are worthy, you are special, you are brave, you are loved, you are supported, you are not alone, you are a fighter, and you got this. Angel, we end our podcast the same every single time. On behalf of Angel Santana and the board of directors at CROC, we wish all of our survivor thrivers a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. Peace.